Stephen Hayes is considered the originator and pioneering researcher into acceptance and commitment therapy, ACT. And in his new book, he lays out the psychological flexibility skills that make it one of the most powerful research-based forms of therapy. Psychological flexibility, he says, refers to your ability to connect with the present moment and direct attention and action toward what you value. Whether you are contending with depression, substance abuse, chronic pain, relationship issues, or limitations in business, the therapy teaches that you hurt where you care. Instead of shunning your vulnerability, you must embrace it to live a meaningful life. Stephen Hayes is the author of A Liberated Mind, How to Pivot Toward What Matters. And it's a pleasure to welcome Stephen Hayes to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's great to be with you, Joe.
Let us begin with a rather simple, I think, definition of what a liberated mind is and then what ultimately brought you to want to explore this.
Well, what I mean by that is being able to sort of get out of your own way. If you just kind of let your mind do what it does, it starts turning your life into a problem to be solved. And, you know, we all have that kind of voice within. Even little kids will understand, you know, Goofy with horns on one shoulder and Goofy with a halo on the other. And we kind of live inside this argument. And meanwhile, life's going on and there's love to be had and contributions to be made. And we tend up to sort of fight a war within. And what I mean by liberated mind is one where people are able to open up, to feel, to think, to come into the present moment, focus on what matters, and get their feet moving in that direction and not wait for their life to be to start when all of the battles within are won, which basically you're going to wait a long time for that.
You write a lot about pivoting in this book, and I'd like to get to that in a moment. But you are, as an originator and a pioneering researcher into acceptance and commitment therapy, talk to us about what that is and the flexibility that that gives us as a tool.
Well, what that is an approach that brings acceptance and mindfulness kind of work and connects it up to commitment, values, and behavior change work. There's about 3,000 studies. This book is really the summary of about 40 years of research that is distilling down to the 20% that does the 80%. I think we now know what the processes are. The smallest set we could get that does the most, that predicts a life going downwards if you mishandle it, and upwards if you handle it properly. And so when you see that, when you know what they are, it's a lot easier to know how to deal with the challenges as they arrive. And that metaphor of a pivot is even the things that we're doing that are messed up, they have a good core to them. It's just we're directing that energy in the wrong direction because we're following the dictates of what I call the dictator within.
How aware are we? How aware should we be of the psychological flexibility that is going on at that moment?
Well, I think we go mindless, and you know, look around, mindfulness is everywhere. You can hardly open a magazine or turn on television without seeing it, and I think the reason it's there is people are trying to find something to help us produce modern minds for this modern world where, for the first time, really, we're exposed to a constant diet of horror, judgment, and comparison, and that's a toxic triad. You know, you see pain with a little computer in your pocket, you pick it up, you just go to a website, there it is, turn on the news, and it's going to be judgment, judgment, judgment. And you can always compare your insides to other people's outsides on Instagram, or if you want to see the gold-plated doorknobs of a billionaire's bathroom, it's easy to do. And so you always feel as though you're not doing as well as you should. And that combination has made our world harsher. And so our young kids are, you know, more than a standard deviation, more distressed, which means, you know, what's normal now would have been abnormal just 30 years ago in terms of anxiety, depression, and so forth. And it's not just that they're telling us. The actual suicide rates are going up. Young people are killing themselves. So something's wrong, and I think we all sense it. And I don't think we can solve it just by doing what monks do. We have to find a way to take what's inside some of our wisdom traditions and put them into the 5 minutes we've got, or the moment on the factory floor, or when you're visiting the person in the next door down in your office, and being able to bring a more flexible, emotionally open, cognitively flexible, present-focused, values-based orientation to what you're doing at that moment. And that turns out to help you everywhere you go. And we've got studies showing everything from winning Olympic gold medals to being able to run your business to being able to keep to your diet to being able to deal with anxiety and depression. It seems to be helpful everywhere we go, and that's what's in Liberated Mind, to tell that story and show people how to do it.
You say that we need to let go of finding a way out and instead pivot toward finding a way in.
Yeah.
How do we make that decision? I assume that's a conscious one.
Yeah, I think it can be made conscious, but when you get it to be a habit, well, then mindlessness works for you because you really want to be doing the right thing even when you're not watching.
Right.
Right now, we're doing the wrong thing even when you're not watching. But you're talking to a panic disordered person in recovery. That's where this whole journey started. I'm a clinical psychologist and kind of walked through the hell of that. And, you know, this kind of pivoting issue is to take what's inside it. Like we yearn to feel, for example. But then the problem-solving mind comes in and says, okay, I got a good idea. You just fear the good stuff. Just feel good stuff. Don't feel bad stuff. Well, it doesn't come packaged that way. I mean, if you love your kids, you're also worried about what's going to happen to them. You know, love and loss comes together. You know that people are going to die. You know the problems are going to happen. And so what we start then doing, we start chasing the feel-good agenda. Eventually, we have data on this, so, and it's kind of pathetic, really. People can't feel even joy itself because the bigger you are, the harder you fall. It's going to go away. And so we start heading towards the happy numb, except being numb is not happy. And I think we're going to have to find a way to bring what's inside our spiritual wisdom traditions. They all have done this in the mystical wings.
Mm.
But figure out how to put it in, put it under the Western science, pull it at its joints, and be able to put it in there and things that you can do in 30 seconds, 5 minutes, etc. We don't have time for 10-day silent retreats as the main way that we learn how to show up in the present moment, especially people who are, you know, working hard and are poor and so forth. I mean, it's only the educated elite who can really do that. In the countries where it started, of course, they took alms so they could go meditate. The normal folks didn't spend hours and hours meditating. They had to work. And so we've got to figure out another way forward.
You talk about your own dealings with panic and anxiety. And as someone who has dealt with that myself, I'm interested in what you do when, because your mind can take over and do really bring you down a lot of bad places very quickly, I've learned.
Yeah.
And so the idea, of course, is to stop that. And you have a lot of people on the outside that will just say, well, just, you know, snap out of it and you'll feel better. But you know you can't do that and you don't have that power. So what power do you have?
Well, you have the power to show up and turn towards instead of turning away. And, Joe, it's nice to meet a fellow traveler. It turns out there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
You know, people come up to me all the time and talk to me about their anxiety history and so forth. And it's good that we're able to, you know, relate to that and connect to that. People who have not been through the panic thing don't fully understand it. But they've been through something else. They've been through an addiction issue or a depression issue or something. Not many people, but you know them well on their insides. Get through life, you know, with happy, happy, joy, joy is the, you know, model of how they're doing it. But no, I think what that moment challenges us to do is to let go of that mind that's evaluating you, telling you you're doing this right, telling you have to run, you have to fight, you have to hide, and get a little bit of distance, not to suppress it and push it away. That just makes it more central. But it would be kind of like if you had a five-year-old who was telling you how to invest your money, and every time you did it, you lost a bunch. Pretty soon you just maybe listen to the voice, but you know, thank you very much. I think I got this covered. And that kind of move of just letting go of entanglement allows you to show up. And then there's options here. Like, for example, you can feel what anxiety feels like in your body and then come back to what you're trying to do here. And probably there's something important. That might even be part of why you're anxious. There's something really important here to do.
Right.
Well, cool. Let's focus on what you know how to do and one step at a time get more competent at being able to actually deliver the goods and to make that happen. And in this moment, I'm here to help people. I wrote this book to help people. I spent my life doing it. I'm 71 years old. I spent the last 40 years working on this. And so talking to you is like an amazing opportunity. And is it a little anxious and so forth? Yeah, I guess so. But of course it would be. It's important. And so if you can avoid the spinning down, that spiraling down, which you know about, Joe, if you've been through this, and you just respectfully decline the invitation of your mind to take over your life and instead use it when it's useful, like when you're doing your taxes, but not when you're trying to peace of mind.
Well, so often in therapy, you're told not to stop doing the normal thing. So if you're dreading and are panic and have anxiety over getting on the plane and going to Florida, that one of the worst things you can do is just cancel the trip to Florida, that you should work your way through it.
Exactly. And, you know, ACT is part of that tradition, the cognitive behavioral tradition, and is combined with exposure. The very first article I wrote on it said this is exposure-based approach. But what's inside exposure is learning how to be values-focused and to be more emotionally and cognitively open and coming into the present. When you combine that, because if you white-knuckle exposure, you know, and you talk to people who have a panic history, anxiety history, they've almost all tried that. They've tried the white-knuckle exposure thing. And that doesn't leave you on the other side feeling any more empowered than you were when you walked in. And we now know, there's some pretty good research on this, that what you need to do during exposure is show up and take to find a way of relating to that moment of exposure in a different way. Change your relationship to the feelings, thoughts, memories, and bodily sensations. And that's exactly what a liberated mind teaches you how to do, how to pivot, to turn. And instead of turning away, you turn towards. But it's not some sort of, you know, take your medicine, you're just going to have to suffer. It's not like that at all. Mm. When you turn towards, you see that there's really cool things to be done right here, right now, that are way more interesting than the very boring process of yet another round of trying to run away or trying to, you know, suppress or trying to control things that you don't need to suppress or control. You don't need to suppress and control your feelings. You need to feel them. You don't want to be overwhelmed by them. But, well, how do you do that? Well, you've got to rein in the mind, the logical part, and focus on what matters.
But that is control in and of itself, right? I mean, you do have to have a certain sense of control. You talk in the book about choosing the qualities of being and doing that we want to evolve toward. That is a matter of control of what we are, of what we are working toward.
It's true. And so this positive control of controlling our behavior linked to our values, choosing our values. So you need to learn it's kind of like the 12-step prayer, frankly, the wisdom to know the difference. There's a time when, you know, letting go is the thing to do, and the mind is telling you have to control your history. You have to control your emotions. That's dangerous, because even if you're halfway successful at it, what you are doing is dumbing yourself down. I mean, we know that, for example, people who have been abused are more likely to be abused again if they don't have their feelers out. If you don't know what, you know, we call it alexithymia, you don't know what you're feeling and you don't even know what the name is for that feeling, you're more likely to have big bad things happen because your feelers aren't there. So, you know, essentially we're changing the arena of control from, instead of trying to control your mind, let's work on controlling our life and find a way to put the mind on a leash and let it do its thing. It can talk to us, it can remind us of stuff. Sometimes it's useful and sometimes it's not. It's easy to program. Have you ever caught yourself thinking critical things and realized, hey, that's my mother's voice, or that was my ex? My ex used to say that. You know, easy to program a mind. And you don't want to be jerked around by that, but we have to learn those skills. So it's a subtle thing of abandoning control when it's not helpful and taking control when it is. And that, making that distinction is what's inside the book. The processes have been pretty well worked out scientifically, and they're not that hard to learn. But if you and actually life will teach them to you, but you better learn it quicker, because meanwhile, bad things happen while you're learning, so let's learn it now.
Right. So once you make those choices, you talk about creating habits that support those choices. How hard is it and challenging to create those habits?
Well, that's a one step at a time thing. And again, your mind says, I want achievement tomorrow. I want to spring forth from the head of Zeus.
Right.
Well, you watch a kid learn how to walk. That's not how it happened. You know, they fall down hundreds and hundreds of times. Why would you be any different? You're going to have to learn a lot of this stuff in small steps and trial and error. But look at all the amazing things that you know how to do. I mean, just watch yourself walk through your house and pivot on one foot and, you know, make your coffee seamless. And, you know, to our normal adult mind that, oh, of course, you could do that. No, watch a kid. They don't know how to do that. They can't even make a turn. That's why we call them toddlers. They have to, like, rock from one thing to another. Well, in the same way, could we be a little patient with ourselves, but keep our eye on the prize and know where we're headed and what we're trying to build. And so we have pretty good evidence that these psychological flexibility skills predict the ability to do things like stick to your diet or quit smoking or, you know, maintain a weight loss program or create a business or places where you really need positive skills-based habits. But it's one step at a time. When you slip and fall, you stand up and you step forward again, and you build the skills to make leaps, because some things you can't do in two steps. If you want to ask somebody to marry you, you got to do that in one step, not three or four. If you're going to go to a new job or decide to leave a job, you got to do that in one step. So we build up to the bold moves. And the single biggest one, choose your values. Man, if you make that bold move of these are the qualities I want to put in my behavior, everything else gets simpler. How are you going to do that? Where are you going to do that? Where is it going to show up? That's not achievement. That'll come or not, depending on the situation. But it's the direction you're going in that allows you then to have achievement that means something. There's a whole lot of people out there who've made a whole lot of money and are thinking about suicide. Achieve a lot and not feel as though you've achieved anything if it's not linked to your values. And that's the single biggest one-step leap there is of, I'm about this. And I walk through how to do that in the book. There's several methods that are tried, true, proven, tested in the lab, tested in the clinic, that help people build those habits that you're talking about.
Let us end here, which is, you touched on this a few moments ago, and I just want to go back to it, because you talk about these changes in our modern world. And this is really one of the first books that I've read, and even through your therapy, that ultimately acknowledges that finding that peace of mind is getting a lot harder than it used to be.
Boy, is it. And I think we all feel it. And there's a feeling of unease in our culture right now, and it's because it's moving so fast, and it's challenging us exactly in the area where if you don't have these kind of flexibility skills, you're going to stumble. And so we better turn towards the greatest invention we've ever come up with, which is Western science. I mean, you're talking on the phone right now because of Western science. You're sitting in the chair you're in. You're doing your job you're doing because of that. But in every behavioral area, Western science has pretty much failed us. And this book walks through why and how we can correct that, because it's not like the behavioral scientists have been asleep. Mm. They just haven't been heard. And sometimes they haven't really focused properly, but we've now putting mindfulness and values and these things that only the wisdom traditions had under the microscope of Western science, and that means we can bring answers to people that are sort of pulled at their joints and are simpler to understand and digest. And we better do it, Joe, because if we don't, it's not going to get better from here. It's going to get worse from here, because these challenges are going up. We're going to be exposed to more horror, more judgment, and more comparison, and that toxic triad just hurts people everywhere it goes, unless you learn how to deal with it.
Stephen Hayes, originator of acceptance and commitment therapy, is the author of the new book, A Liberated Mind, How to Pivot Toward What Matters. The book is published by Avery. Dr. Hayes, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you. It was awesome to be with you.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is A Liberated Mind, How to Pivot Toward What Matters. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.